From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1947 when the Cleveland Indians baseball team officially adopted a character named Chief Wahoo to be its logo and mascot. The Chief is a smiling Indian and has been drawn in different iterations over the years. And this past March, Cleveland Indians owner Paul Dolan announced that the team is essentially demoting Chief Wahoo into a secondary role. Dolan said that the team would use a block C as its primary logo on uniforms and hats. Dolan told the Cleveland Plain Dealer, quote, "We do have empathy for those who take issue with it. We have minimized the use of it and will continue to do what we think is appropriate," end quote. Here in Western New York, many schools reduced or eliminated Native American imagery in the past 15 years, but there are still some schools that use it. We reached out to several, but none were available or interested in joining a discussion today. This hour, we ask whether the American sports scene on all levels should eliminate Native American imagery, mascots, and logos. And for our listeners, if you went to a school with Indian imagery or logos or mascots, I'd love to know what you thought of it then and maybe what you think of it now. Let me welcome our guests. Michael Galbin's here. He's a curator and historian for the Ganondagan State Historic Site. Michael, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Jason Lukart's on the phone with us. He is a former editor and a writer for Let'sGoTribe.com. It's a Cleveland Indians fan site. And Jason is someone I've gotten to know pretty well through the online world. I think he's one of the really smart writers out there, and he's written about this issue. Jason, thanks for taking the time as well.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
And Jason is also an elementary school teacher, I should say. A little bit of background about the host, and I think it's just a disclaimer. I've not only done a little bit of writing for the same site that Jason has written for, but Jason and I are both Cleveland Indians fans. I'm a native Clevelander. I grew up a big Tribe fan, and I will disclose my bias right away. I've never understood the Chief Wahoo thing, and I'd like to see it gone. But I also want to be open-minded to all points of view this hour. Let's have a discussion. If you want to call the program, you can do it toll-free. 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Jason, writing for Let'sGoTribe.com, you wrote, quote, "When Chief Wahoo is not just demoted but eliminated, there will be blowback. But if it were my decision to make, I'd rip the Band-Aid off, ride out the criticism, and then get on with my life. The imagery is racist, and Dolan understands that." You think it's time?
I do. I mean, I think it's past time. I understand why it's sort of a difficult decision for Dolan to make because of that blowback. Anytime there's any sort of Chief Wahoo discussion, you see really passionate comments from people who are clearly strongly attached to the logo or the character. And a lot of threats about, you know, "I'm not going to go to games if they do that."
Baloney, by the way.
I understand why it's become an overdue thing, but I do think it's overdue. I think Dolan's comments show that he understands that, but the businessman in him can't bring himself to just be done with it, which is what I said I would do.
And I say it's baloney when fans say, "I'm not going to go to games. I'm not going to buy any merchandise." You can say that, but we are all big children as adults when we love sports teams. You know, it's sort of the last vestige of our childhoods. We still love it. A lot of adults still love sports. I don't think many people are not going to go if Chief Wahoo's gone. What do you think, Jason?
I don't either. I'm sure there are a few who are just so stuck on it that out of some misguided principle they wouldn't go. But I think about the New England Patriots, who were another team that, maybe 15 years ago changed their logo, and it was a popular logo. I think it was Pat the Patriot, a guy snapping a football in sort of old Minuteman attire. And they changed to a new logo, and a couple years later, they won the Super Bowl, and my gosh, what do you know? People love the New England Patriots and love the new logo. The Indians are in first place right now. If they were to drop Chief Wahoo today and then go on to win the World Series, attendance next year would be higher than it's been in, you know, since the mid-90s.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I went to Ohio University, our big rival, and my twin brother went to Miami, Ohio, where it used to be the Miami Redskins, and they changed that a couple of decades ago, and they changed it to the Red Hawks. And guess what? They still sell a lot of merchandise, and people don't walk around campus bemoaning the loss of Redskins there. But again, I want to explore why some people defend it, particularly white Americans who defend the imagery. And I want to ask Michael Galvin for some of his thoughts. But first, Michael, why don't you tell us about your own background and what you do at Ganondagan, et cetera?
Well, I'm a longtime resident of the Rochester area, lived here continuously since the 80s. I grew up in the West Coast in Nevada. I'm a Northern Paiute and Washoe Indian. And, you know, I've been involved on and off in this issue locally since I was a high schooler at West Irondequoit High School.
For you, Michael, you see what the Cleveland Indians have done. They've pulled back on the use of this logo. You know, I'd ask you if it's enough. I know what your answer is going to be, but what's in general, what's your feeling on what the Indians have done this year with it?
I think it's a step in the right direction, but, you know, the analogy of a ripping the Band-Aid off all at once is probably very apt. Simply by recognizing that there is an issue is a huge positive move. And I just think in the you know, we're in an age that where people don't deserve to be treated as mascots.
People don't. That's a good way of putting it. And Jason, on Michael's point, I think it was you who wrote, I can't remember, it was either you or someone else in the online community who said, if the Cleveland Indians recognize that it is a problem and they want to pull back on it, if it's a problem, get rid of it. Why reduce it in any measure that's not an entire elimination? Was that, I don't know if that was your point, but what do you make of that?
Well, yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, is once you identify that and accept and acknowledge that there's something wrong with it, when you don't then immediately change it, I think you're pretty clearly putting, you know, money ahead of, you know, what's right. And I don't think that's especially surprising, you know, in our culture, but I don't think there's any really other way around it. I mean, he talked about understanding that, it's, you know, his words were an important part of our history and legacy. But to get rid of it right now doesn't mean it wouldn't still be part of the team's history. It doesn't, you know, erase it from the last almost 70 years. And that's something a lot of people talk about, too, is, you know, the memories they have of it. And, oh, my gosh, if it was gone. Well, if it was gone, your memories of it wouldn't be. So I think for Dolan to acknowledge it is a step in the right direction. But as you're saying, it does bring up sort of a tricky issue of once you acknowledge that there's something wrong with it, then when you don't change it, you know, the only defense is you're worried about the PR reaction.
The PR or the money, but by the way, Jason, I am much more likely to buy a Cleveland baseball piece of memorabilia, hat, shirt, whatever, if Chief Wahoo is not on it. You know, so there has to be some part of the population of sports fans that, and I think is probably growing, that would give a financial incentive the other way, as opposed to this protect, 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 because people will stop buying.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, same thing. I haven't, you know, when I was younger, I wore hats with Chief Wahoo on it and had shirts and, you know, jerseys with the patch and stuff like that. I don't think I've bought anything with Chief Wahoo on it for, I mean, more than 10 years. And yeah, so for me, I seek out the stuff that doesn't happen. I'm sure you're right that there are people, and there's probably a few people who, you know, again, I don't think it's a large number, but who aren't going to games because of this issue, who would maybe go to a couple games in sort of support of the decision. So I do think the economic impact, you're right, it cuts both ways. I think it probably cuts slightly more towards hurting the team initially.
Sure, on balance early on, but probably not much in the long run. Yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly. And again, if the team is successful, people are going to be excited and they're going to want to run out and buy the new stuff that the team is wearing while they're successful.
Sure.
That really is.
You know, ultimately, winning baseball games is how the Indians are going to maximize their profit margin. And at that point, you know, the logo that's on their cap is going to be a very minor issue one way or the other in terms of what it does for the team's, you know, financials.
Exactly. Increase or decrease in merchandising is directly related to the success or failure of the team. And I there is no other more clear connection.
Well, look at the Cleveland Browns. They tried to sell new uniforms and new merchandise just two off seasons ago. and they still go out and win three or four games, and they get belittled for it. If they had won 12 or 13 games, people would think those were the greatest uniforms ever. Before I get to your phone calls, I want to listen to something and get our guest take on this. It was in April, the first week of the baseball season, that ESPN's Bomani Jones showed up on the air for their morning show wearing a T-shirt that had what looked like a Cleveland Indians logo and a Cleveland Indians script name, except for it didn't say Indians, it said Caucasians, and it was what looked like Chief Wahoo, except for it wasn't a feather or a headdress, it was a dollar sign and kind of a Donald Trump kind of a haircut. And Bomani Jones wears this on the air, and of course, a lot of people start talking about it. Some start complaining about it, that it was somehow offensive, and Bomani's saying, oh, really? So let's listen to the exchange that Bomani Jones had about that shirt with one of ESPN's morning hosts there.
I think you were trying to make some kind of statement.
Statement is obvious. Like, this is the same thing. Like, what we have here, this is the same thing that goes on with the logo for the Cleveland Indians, right? Yep. So, like, to have a problem with the logo of this would be to have a problem with the Indians. But if you're quiet about the Indians and now you got something to say about my shirt, I think it's time for introspection. I think that's a fair thing.
You might be lagging in that area, and I want to get into that. So we have the Washington Redskins, Cleveland Indians, Florida State Seminoles, missing any others, Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
Do you think it's time that there's a change, that ethnicity, skin color, race should not be a team mascot?
Yeah, well, I feel like there's a certain level of nuance, like the Florida State thing with the Seminoles has levels that I don't fully understand. Mm-hmm. But like the Tomahawk on the Braves jersey, I grew up rooting for that team. There's no defense for doing that. This, like the Indians logo, there's no defense for doing that. It is the whole purpose is, well, why would you make these people a mascot? Well, it's based on the stereotypes that we've had of them in the past. So what would be the justification for keeping them with a need? And then Washington, where it's just a slur.
So that's Bomani Jones on ESPN. And I should point out, by the way, that ESPN brass eventually stepped in and said, for the rest of the day, just cover up that shirt. You know, they couldn't even take it. But Michael Galvin, I know you agree with his sentiment. I want you to expound on a point that you made before the show began. You said that one of the reasons we're still having this conversation in 2016 is that your voice is underrepresented in media to begin with, right?
Yeah, totally. We're nearly absent from any media sources. But, you know, in the past 20 years, with the emergence of the internet and a, you know, sort of a level soapbox for everybody to express their concerns, I think we've gotten a lot of traction. And it's been pretty positive, I would say, getting our word out there. So in an instance, the raw irony of Mr. Jones's appearance is the seriously offended white people that called and expressed themselves based on how offended they were on the shirt. I mean, and that raw irony, I can't believe that people aren't totally aware of that.
Yeah, it took ESPN a couple of hours of hearing complaints about Caucasians with the money sign as a logo before they asked him to cover it up. It has been decades, and they have not asked anyone to cover up Redskins, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jason, what did you think of the Bomani Jones clip?
Yeah, I thought it was – I remember when it happened. I think it was interesting. One other thing that jumps out to me is it does bring up the because as you said, there were, you know, white people who were offended and bothered by that. But there are other white people who think it's sort of funny, and you know, I've seen comments of, oh, you know, from white people saying, oh, I would buy and wear that shirt. I think one sort of added element to this, and Michael is much more qualified to speak to this than I am, but is the fact that the Native American experience in the United States is so dramatically different from the European American experience. And so it's one thing for a white person to sort of have a good laugh at something like that, you know, for those who weren't bothered by it. But I still think, you know, there are important ways in which it's a totally different situation, and that Chief Wahoo is much worse than the sort of Richie Rich, Donald Trump-esque logo that Jones had on his shirt that day.
I think it's a good point. I want Michael to comment on that. And I will also just add, anybody who wanted to wear a Caucasian shirt, I think it would come down to your motivations. Do you really think it's sort of cheeky and funny, or are you trying to make a point? Are you trying to spark a discussion? But that's sort of a different kind of a point. Michael, what do you make of what Jason said there about the difference in experience?
Well, I think that when the group that you belong to has the can afford to make fun of itself, and it's a totally different experience than when you come from a marginalized, an oppressed people, and You know, we just simply cannot afford to objectify ourselves, commodify ourselves in the same way. There is no irony. It just becomes sad.
Well said. Every phone line's lit up. Let's get to your phone calls. My guest for the hour, you're hearing Michael Galbin in studio, curator and historian for the Ganondagan State Historic Site. And on the phone is Jason Lukart. He is a former editor and writer for Let'sGoTribe.com. It's a Cleveland Indians fan site. And he has written recently and probably many times about Chief Wahoo and the Cleveland Indians' decision this past winter heading into the season to reduce the use of Chief Wahoo in logos for the team. Our first phone call is Sue in Greece. Go ahead, Sue.
Oh, hi. I hope you can hear me okay because I am on a speakerphone and I need to be because I am driving very safely.
Pretty good so far. Go ahead.
A couple comments I wanted to make is, I guess I want to kind of back up to when I first heard about, you know, this issue maybe going back 15 years ago, and I am not Native American, so I kind of feel like it's maybe not my thing to speak on, but I think I initially looked at it like, isn't it more of an honor as a Native American? But now as I listen, I guess I do understand, you know, that it's not looking at Native American in, you know, in the light that you would like to be viewed as. So is there a way to tie in the positive things? Because rather than just saying, you know, I guess where I tie this into thinking about like the Fighting Irish, I don't think there's anybody who is a Notre Dame fan that would say, yeah, we should change that because that, looking at it, is almost a place of honor, knowing that not everybody who's Irish is a short little leprechaun that's got a mug of beer in his hand.
Sure.
So, kind of tie, like, linking those two things together.
Sure. So, thanks for the phone call. And I think that's a good faith question that people have that, hey, could this actually honor Indian populations? I heard from a graduate of Avon High School who told me that their mascot is still the Braves. It's the Avon Braves. And she said there was a conversation about changing that mascot about 15 years ago, and it was decided that Brave is a term of honor. And it actually was highlighted more heavily after that conversation. The school, she says, fundraised and bought a giant statue of a Native American man and erected it next to the Avon football field in 2013. The general consensus was that was done out of honor. But she also adds she does not believe they consulted any Native American people about that. So on the question of can these mascots, team names, etc., actually honor these populations? Michael Galbin?
Well, I think it's a matter of your perspective and opinion. And unless you're a part of the group that's being mascotized, really, you can't say whether or not it's an honor or a disgrace. And I think that it's, you know, in the terms of Avon, being within Western New York and within Aboriginal Seneca territory, it would behoove them to contact somebody from the Seneca Nation and ask them what their thoughts are. And if they could get that kind of connection going and dialogue, I think they'd be better off for it.
And I want to say, Michael, my recollection, or at least my reading of that comment from an Avon High School graduate, I don't know for sure that Avon has or has not reached out. To your knowledge, have they reached out to local historians, people involved in your community?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. So there's that. And we should also point out that back in 2001, New York State's Education Commissioner, Richard Mills, I think at the time, he didn't issue an order, but he put a very public comment out urging all school districts in New York State to drop all imagery, logo, mascotizing of Indian populations. And a lot of them did. You don't see Indian imagery and mascots in Monroe County, Wayne County. You see some in Livingston, Genesee County. But that change has been, you know, I didn't know the history because that was a little before I got here, Michael, but that seems to have been a significant moment, I think, at least in school athletics and New York State, the school systems here, yeah?
I definitely think so. New York really took a leadership role in reflecting on this issue, and I think a lot of schools did, you know, take the time to reflect and review and update and revise what they had been doing.
And we just saw this past fall in Lancaster, outside Buffalo, their school board voted unanimously in November to quit using Redskins as the school's nickname, making it the latest school to drop that specific term. And that vote brought up what school board members described as a months-long educational journey featuring discussions with students, parents, and local Native American tribal leaders. And in the end, the Buffalo Suburbs School Board said they could not deny that the term Redskin is a slur. Michael, is that the single most offensive term that sports teams use?
It might be. To me, to my mind, it certainly is in the at the top of the list. You know, it's certainly, and I don't think anyone denies that it is a negative and it's a slur, these names. But it's the effect on the students, and especially when you're trying to educate a population, as these schools are supposed to do, when you have a charter to educate your students, I think you're doing a disservice when you continue to promote racial stereotypes.
Before I get back to your phone calls, let me go back to Jason Lucard, who is not only a baseball writer, but he is an elementary school teacher. And Jason, on our program, we've had discussions with Michael Galbin, with Peter Jemison, the folks from Ganondagan, about the fact that in our textbooks, students still don't learn a whole lot about Native American history, real Indian culture. And my concern as a parent now of a four-year-old is that if we are reducing knowledge of Indian culture to these caricatures of mascots, of Chief Wahoo, of Redskins, of Braves, why are we not educating more? Can you speak at all to where you look at education and the value of teaching real Indian history in textbooks in schools? Is that happening where you are?
I think it happens more where I am than in most places. I'm just outside Chicago in a suburb called Oak Park, which I think has a deserved reputation as being fairly progressive. And I grew up here. And, you know, when I was in fourth grade or in elementary school, at that time, we were still sort of learning, you know, Christopher Columbus discovered America and, you know, all these great things. And I will say that in Oak Park, that's not how that part of American history is taught anymore. I do think we have, you know, a much more accurate and balanced look at, you know, those early explorers and the colonization, you know, by the British and Spanish and French. So I think things have gotten better. I'm sure there's a lot of room that they could be even better than they are. One of our middle schools, a teacher who just retired, was Native American, and I know he had a great collection of materials that teachers at any of the schools in the district were welcome to sort of borrow, and he would come in and give presentations. So I do think there are school districts that do a really good job with it. I'm certain there are school districts that still teach it the way, you know, it was taught 20, 30, 100 years ago. You know, I think anytime you're talking about American education, you're going to have a huge range, you know, of different experiences.
Well, on that subject, let's get back to our phone calls. And this is Joel in Rochester. Go ahead, Joel.
Hey, this is a great and sad topic. Every year for about the last 15 years, I've taught a number of courses in which I've asked students, some of which were sports history classes, by the way, what their kind of feeling was about American Indians being used as mascots. And when you survey the students, generally somewhere around 80% of the students will say that, you know, it's not a problem, they don't see any trouble with it, and they don't see any reason why people should be fighting against the use of American Indian mascots. And then over a series of days, as you talk about these issues, and as you watch films like In Whose Honor, which I think is a good film to watch in response to the earlier caller that deals with University of Illinois' Chief Illiniwek, you start to see changes. And so if you survey the same students, about 80% after that week is over, hold the opposite perspective and really do have a problem with American Indians being used as mascots. The amazing thing is the Seminole tribe is the only tribe in the United States that has supported the use of a mascot for a sports team. And here we have, in some cases, whether it's Washington, D.C., with the most offensive term, arguably, you've got tourists that fly into both of the airports in Washington, D.C., and immediately they're hit smack in the face with the most offensive and racist term for Native peoples. And the fact that this persists in the 21st century is just mind-boggling. given that the Congress of American Indians, which represents all the 500-plus federally recognized tribes, have opposed the use of these mascots. And countless congressional studies have found that this is offensive. And our trademark offices have, since the early 1990s, found this offensive. And a lot of sports teams dropped these mascots in the 60s and 70s, like Syracuse, that actually had two native mascots. North Dakota had to drop its Fighting Sioux mascot. I mean, it's just, other than the term squaw, there's probably not a more offensive term that we could be using in the 21st century.
Michael Galvin, what do you think?
Well, I think you're right. I don't have an issue with anything that you said. I commend you for taking the time to educate your students. You know, it's very difficult to separate or to give yourself the time to educate on subjects like this. The schools that we work with make an effort to learn about culture and history, come to us out at Ganondagan, and we spend a lot of time with them, working with them. To me, the failure in the educational system is that when students emerge from the public system in high school, that they have no sense, really, of how it is that that school came to be built in a town that was once Indian land. I mean, to not understand that, I feel, as you know, as any American really should be angered by that, and not understanding that history. It's not a pretty one. It's an ugly history, but it's a legacy which must be understood so that we don't fall into the same traps and treat one another poorly.
Joe, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the amazing quotes that really sticks in my life, and I don't remember quotes that often, but Barbara Munson, who's an Oneida Indian, once said, you know, when someone says you are hurting them by your action, if you persist, then the harm becomes intentional. In other words, somebody's telling you that they're harming you, and you continue to either, you know, harm them with your words or with your, you know, physical self, you're creating what I would say is a violent action. And in this case, you have pretty much everybody saying this is not right who's a native person in the United States, certainly all the tribes, and it's persisting. And, you know, this isn't about being politically correct. It's not about anything like that. It's about the fact that you're harming native peoples. And if one of the things that hasn't been talked about are really a lot of the socioeconomic issues within native communities, whether it's with regards to suicide or life expectancy or whatever. And, you know, having native mascots, I would argue, has a direct effect on some of those really terrible socioeconomic outcomes.
Well, Joel, thank you for the phone call. And to Joel's point about visitors to Washington being greeted with the imagery of the term Redskin and wondering why that team hasn't made a change, owner Daniel Snyder and his wife appeared on ESPN recently. I want to listen to a clip of what they had to say. This is Daniel Snyder and then his wife. And, you know, no surprise, they have not changed their position that under no circumstances are they going to support changing the name of the Washington Redskins. Let's listen to what they told ESPN.
It's been great support. I mean, they're just, I think that, you know, most, whether it's the owners or people at the league, most people understand what the team name means. They look at it as we all do, as honor, respect.
Dan cares more than anybody. He's the most passionate fan that there is. And we, you know, care very much. And I think everything that he's doing is taking us in the right direction.
Give me a break. I think to Joel's point about if you know something is hurting somebody and you don't stop doing it, then you don't care more than anybody. Sorry, Dan Snyder's wife. You know, I mean, Michael, what do you make of that?
It's shameful. I feel like the you know, continuing to perpetuate this stereotype, to continue to commercialize and objectify and even dehumanize Native people, any people, is a total shame. And to his you know, his resilience in holding to his line, I think, is purely economic. Unfortunately, a lot of people agree that the dollar trumps any arguments. And again, I would say that's just a shame.
Gary writes to the program and says, Evan, regarding the Fighting Irish, a leprechaun is a mythical character. Chief Wahoo depicts a real human being. Michael, do you agree with that dichotomy?
People have often made comparisons to other groups of people who have been chosen as mascots. And I feel like their experience is not the same. It's not comparable. A Viking doesn't exist anymore. A stealer is an occupation which can be held by anybody. An Irish person did not experience the same dispossession. It did not experience the same genocidal policies government-sponsored that Native peoples did. So the comparisons, I would say, are weak.
All right, let me get our only break of the hour, and then we're going to come back to Rich, Andy, Keith, more of your phone calls and emails as we talk about the future of using human beings as mascots and logos, and in particular in our country, the way sports teams in general use Native populations. We've been discussing the fact that the Cleveland Indians have been pulling back but not eliminating the use of Chief Wahoo in its logos and imagery, team shirts and hats, etc. Michael Galbin's here, curator and historian for Ganondagan State Historic Site, and on the phone is Jason Lucard, a former editor and writer for Let'sGoTribe.com. It's a Cleveland Indians fan site. Your phone call's next. Coming up in our second hour, there are more than 70,000 veterans living in the Rochester metro area. It's the largest per capita population of veterans in New York State. And on Saturday, it's the third annual Valor Day, a single day of service providers coming together, answering questions, helping veterans, offering their expertise. And we're previewing that with a kind of Valor Hour next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Michael Galbin and I were just speaking in our brief break about the fact that, you know, you made the point that Daniel Snyder, he's motivated by money here. He knows, or he's concerned that changing the name Washington Redskins will hurt him financially, even though I think ultimately that's wrong. But he's motivated first by money. And, I made the point to Michael that I love the Cleveland baseball team, but I'm not buying any memorabilia for my son until they change the logo and get rid of Chief Wahoo entirely, if not the team name as well. And, you know, Michael, your point was money does talk, and that is how change happens, right?
Totally. And, any perceived moral high ground that Mr. Snyder's standing on or protection of legacy pales in comparison to the economic motivations that he has. It's it, bottom line. So the way to really affect it is to hit them in the wallet. That's it.
Rich in Rochester. Next up. Go ahead, Rich.
You know, I remember watching that Daniel Snyder blurb, and I had to turn it off because it hurts. And I think part of this is that as a country, we have not come to terms with the genocide on the Native people. We don't want to acknowledge it. We don't want to do any of those things. So we have made them these caricatures, calling them Braves, yet knowing we did everything we could to kill every single Brave that was out there. As far as we were concerned as a country, these genocides really fly in the face of this picture of greatness that we paint, this picture of manifest destiny, which was the governmental policy for the genocide. And it's amazing that we're willing to objectify and dehumanize and minimize people to this day. And I just don't know what's going to happen. Washington, D.C., they won't change that, because if they do, they have to first acknowledge those things, and that will not ever be done. Not ever be done, but I have great confidence that as a country we won't do that, because we don't want to face the things that really, some of the underpinnings of this great history that we supposedly have as a country.
Rich, thank you for
slavery to the genocide to everything else.
Yeah, thanks for that phone call. And I think that hits on a couple of different points. There's that not understanding, or at least not being willing to look at our history that Michael Galbin, that point that Michael made earlier goes to Rich's comment. And then Rich also talks about the fact that he thinks there are a certain amount of people who just, they're not going to change their mind. They think they're right. You can't get through to them. And I want to ask Jason Lucard about that, because Jason writes for a Cleveland Indians fan site that has thousands of followers and readers, and a lot of them are commenters. And Jason, when you wrote about the fact that you think Chief Wahoo is a racist logo, it's long past time to completely eliminate it, I'm sure you heard from people who disagreed, and I wonder if You know, do you feel like there is a way to reach people on this? Is there a back? I mean, what's your experience been on that?
Well, again, I was careful to identify that the logo is racist, but not to imply that the fans who want to keep it are racist. I think one of the problems in all of these efforts to create change is the way that they're approached and the way that they're handled. I think oftentimes, you know, again, and the Chief Wahoo one is the one that I know best, but when it's brought up, I think a lot of people who want it to be changed imply pretty heavily that anyone who doesn't want to change it is racist. And I think that sort of approach causes people to get really defensive and to dig their heels in about it. Because I think then for them, it feels like if they acknowledge that the logo should be moved, it feels like they're somehow acknowledging that they've been racist all this time, which I don't think is the case. I said in that same article that you're referring to, you know, that I have positive associations. Wahoo. I remember, you know, being a little kid and sketching him in my notebook in class and things like that. I don't think I was racist to do that. I think at some point you just understand that an inappropriate image to be used for, you know, a professional sports team and for the entertainment of a group of people, almost none of whom, you know, belong to the group that the logo is a caricature of. I don't think, though, that, you know, Indians fans are racist. And I think if we want to change things, we have to find, if we're going to try to convince anyone to change their mind, which I don't think we even have to do. I think that Indians could just change it and, you know, and go on. But if they're going to try to change people's minds, or if anyone's going to, I think you have to be able to do it in a way that's not going to put the people you're trying to convince on the defensive, because I just don't think that's how minds are changed, not just on this issue, on any issue. In the, you know, the political climate in our culture, in our country right now, again, I use that phrase, digging in your heels. I feel like there's just a lot of that. And, you know, people sort of make up their minds and don't want to be convinced by someone yelling at them that they're wrong. And so I think there's got to be a different approach if you do really want to change minds.
Michael Galvin, he's making the point that a child sketching a Chief Wahoo logo in a class is ignorant, not racist, ignorant of sort of pain and experience. And what do you make of Jason's point about how you approach this, trying to win over hearts and minds on it?
Yeah, I mean, as a child sketching an image, you're not expressing racist views, but you're being taught them, and you're being taught to perceive and being taught a way of thinking, which, you know, if we think of it in broad terms, is a way of subjugating and continuing to subjugate a group of people who live here within the boundaries of the United States and are not afforded the right to determine how they are perceived. And I like you, would not characterize anyone who's a fan of the Cleveland Indians and as a racist, but you're complicit. And unless you take a step back and really think about what it is that you're supporting, I feel like that complacency is the problem, and only through education really can that be changed. We're getting there.
Andy in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi, I just had a couple of kind of like personal, like, I don't know, experiences within this realm of this conversation that I wanted to touch on real quick. And first one is, I've had a lot of generations of my family. Both my parents went to Miami University, and you know, I remember when they changed the logo. You know, people were like upset for like 10 minutes.
You're talking,
you know?
Miami. You're talking Miami, Ohio.
Ohio. Yeah.
It went from Redskins to Red Hawks. Yes.
Yeah, to Red Hawks. And I, as a kid, I was always like, well, that's a better name. I don't know why they were the Redskins in the first place. It seems kind of weird. But that's a little kid's story. You know, I didn't really have the context.
Sure.
But I've had cousins, you know, since that have gone there, and they're Red Hawks through and through. So I don't buy the whole thing that like, oh man, it's for tradition. People change. People, you know, when they realize that it's not right, you know, they change their mind and no one thinks twice about it anymore.
Yep.
So it's not like people are still riding around going, go Redskins, you know. They changed it and people are good with it and they embrace Red Hawks. So that's the first one. And then the second thing is I went to Aquinas for high school, which is, of course, a little Irish, and then you've got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And I can respect that, you know, the Irish perhaps didn't have to go through the same sort of, you know, genocide as the American Indians unfortunately did. But every people has to deal with the struggle. And, the image of fighting Irish, I think, comes from the fact that they were oppressed by the British government to the extent of having to have mass deaths from famine, having to come here. And they were living a pretty, very impoverished life for a long time. And so I can respect that it's maybe not the perfect comparison, but I really don't think that anybody should be stereotyped as some sort of, this or that. And it's not just a leprechaun, It's literally supposed to be an Irish guy that's fighting somebody. So they can say it's a leprechaun all they want. I still think it's a little bit inappropriate in the same light that they should be a little bit more respectful of, people's history. That's all.
Andy, thanks for the phone call. Michael Galbin, what do you think?
I agree with what he's saying. The comparison isn't perfect, but I'm of the opinion that people don't deserve to be turned into mascots from whatever group they come from. So let me just share with you one quick story. It might take 30 seconds.
Sure.
When I went to Western Unicoid High School as a sophomore, I was interested in sports. I wanted to wrestle. I might even wanted to join the basketball team. And I had gone to the first wrestling practice, and then I realized that the mascot was the Indians, right? Okay, I can deal with that. And yet at the end of the week, when we had a homecoming game, this young native boy, aged whatever, 17, 16, attended the game with a couple of new friends that he'd made, and good guys. And we sat in the bleachers, and before the game, this guy comes running out, blasting through a paper sign saying the Indians, and the fans erupted with war paint and feathers, and this guy kind of did this clownish, buffoonish dance around the field, and I just wanted to melt into the bleachers. I wanted to just disappear. And it was obvious to the friends that I'd gone with that I was uncomfortable, to say the least, and I felt that they were embarrassed for me. I never went back to a single game. I dropped out of wrestling, and I felt like it was not that I couldn't deal with it or handle it. I just didn't want to subject myself to that kind of humiliation. And so as a student in a public school that might be sitting there, one of maybe 10 or 2, or even if it was just me, I just feel like it's not fair that we still treat people this way. And it's not necessarily the mascot, the name. It becomes a magnet and a target for people, and to bring out their stereotypes. Scalp the Indians in the newspaper, in the school paper. It's the war paint and the whooping. It's just a cumulative effect. And I just don't want my children to have to go through the same things I did.
Did you feel like you had allies there? Did your friends act as allies?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, but I mean, they can't share in the experience the way I was,
sure.
But they certainly were sensitive. And, I'm not going to say that I turned antisocial, but I just didn't feel welcome, and I probably didn't have the capacity to express myself well enough at the time. But, when I shared that story during the period in the 90s when Irondequoit was considering the name change, I mean, I feel like it had an impact.
And are you surprised now, 20 plus years later, Michael, that we have a lot fewer schools in our area using Indian imagery? Or are you surprised that in 2016 there are any?
Yeah, I'm surprised that we're still debating this issue. I really am. I'm surprised by a lot of things that we discuss in America. and certainly there's issues which are far more immediate and pressing. But I feel like we can do it all, and we can multitask.
I think that if
yeah,
I can interrupt
ahead,
for just
yeah, go
what
ahead,
you
Jason.
Just said about it's not the most pressing, and I think people use that as an argument to ignore this issue and other issues, that somehow because it's not the biggest problem facing the country, it's not worth trying to do anything about it, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
If you think it's a problem, then it's worth expending some time and energy to try to fix it, even if there are larger problems out there too.
Well said. Back to the phones. Barb in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Barb.
Hi. I think it is a really big problem. And I'm Caucasian, not Native American, but I not that the two are whatever, but you know what I'm saying. I'm just identifying where I'm coming from. But I'm also, I look at this and I used to be a little uncertain, confused about, is it really necessary? But the more I'm listening, the more I'm getting it. And another thought experiment occurred to me. I mean, think about what we are talking about, genocide. I've heard it mentioned 3, maybe 4 times on the show now. And we're talking about genocide. I mean, think about, you know, a thought experiment, Germany, a high school there calling itself, you know, calling its team the Cologne, insert anti-Semitic slur here. I mean, you know, it makes sense to me that that the messed ups we have here that are based on more than cultural appropriation, but just the real ignorance of people's pain and the history of our country, those mascots need to go. Thanks.
Barb, thank you. And Michael, what she said is that, you know, she recognizes it as a problem, but maybe not as pressing. But throughout this hour, she's been listening, and it's really sinking in. I think, to your point, when people really take the time to think about it and really listen to stories and try to learn, it's hard to see it another way. It's just a matter of, do you have the access? Are you part of the media conversation? Are you part of the school conversation?
Yeah, I can appreciate, you know, when you face this kind of cognitive dissonance, when you've had a belief or a way of thinking all your life, and then you're told that the way you've been thinking is actually not quite the best way, or it's not right, or it's offensive, or hurting others, you know, that can be troubling, and you get a lot of pushback. But I think the conversation needs to happen. I think that we should continue to talk about these issues. They may not be immediate, as I've expressed, but we can change. If it doesn't matter as much as other issues, then why is it that it's so difficult to make the correct change, you know? There was a recent study that came out, and probably everybody's aware of, that there was a study done, maybe it was the Post that came out, and they determined that there was, you know, they tried to canvass Native Americans, and they determined that it was an overwhelming majority of Native people did not object to the mascot issue. And those kind of polls and that kind of, you know, pseudo-study is, you know, very harmful. We know that these polls can be manipulated. We don't know who they talk to. This is a phone poll, and like the internet, it's anonymous. So I just feel like the opposing view is sort of gathering its troops and digging its heels in, but I think that it comes from just a place of ignorance, really. And I think that if you were opened your mind up and listened to what people have to say, you will revise your thinking.
Let me try to get one more phone call in. And Joel, who called in earlier, who's been a professor, writes into the program and says, conservative estimates by historians are that 20 million Native peoples were killed or died as a result of European arrival in the Americas. 20 million. That's why they use the term genocide.
Well, yes. And, you know, that is divided into many different categories, disease and war being two of the most harmful. But there were government policies of genocide, government-sponsored policies of genocide in Texas, in the Midwest, in California, and hundreds of thousands of Native peoples were slaughtered for profit based on these policies. So when we use the term genocide, don't confuse that with European disease, which was terribly devastating. Don't confuse that with simply losing a war. No, these are government-sponsored policies of eradication.
And I think when it comes to the use of mascots now, think about the way most Americans think about when you tell them to think about Native people. They think of these caricatures. Or the Washington Post reports last week at a Donald Trump rally, he was making fun of Elizabeth Warren. He called her Pocahontas. And the supporters in the crowd erupted with, you know, sort of cartoonish Indian battle cry, you can probably figure out what they were doing, and that's racist. That's racist. As opposed to understanding, when I think of Indian peoples, I think of people like Michael Galvin or Peter Jemison, or friends who I'd go have a beer with, or go hang out and talk history, and go to sites and learn and read and. Anyway, the point is, I think we've unfortunately caricaturized an entire population through it. I want to get one more quick phone call. Gage, you've got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi, just quickly. I think the discomfort a name change causes a fan pales in comparison to the humiliation and discomfort that that name causes those it directly affects. So I have no problem changing a name. The fans will get over it, and unfortunately the damage has been done for those that it does affect directly, and I would, you know, I'd be surprised if they ever really do get over the trauma that must cause.
Gage, thank you for the phone call. 20 seconds, Michael Galbin. We didn't see a whole lot of pushback this hour. Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, I was. Actually, I am. You know, the opposition has arguments which they present, and they're the same arguments that are not valid and weak. I'm surprised that we didn't hear any. I'm encouraged that the listenership is so progressive, and I hope that we continue these discussions.
Thanks for being here. And Jason Lukart on the phone with us from Chicago. He is not only an elementary school teacher, but a writer and former editor of Let'sGoTribe.com, a Cleveland Indians fan site. Jason, 10 seconds. Do you think the Indians are going to eliminate Chief Wahoo or even change the name in the next 5 or 10 years?
No, I think five years from now we're still going to see Chief Wahoo. I wish that weren't the case, but I think it will be.
You do really fine work, Jason. I really admire what you do. You're a very good writer and a thoughtful guy, and I appreciate you taking the time to join the program. Thank you.
Sure. It was a pleasure.
And Michael Galbin from Ganon again. Go out and see him. Been busy out there, having fun there. A lot of great things happening out there. Thank you for cutting into your schedule and coming in.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break. Much more Connections next.